Breakfast Benz Hockey Podcast, Tim Benz, along with Seth Rohrbaugh, our hockey beat writer, who covers the Pittsburgh Penguins. Pens taking on the Ottawa Senators on Friday night, back half a home-and-home after the loss to the Senators in overtime. Another OT defeat. Seth is often kind enough to join us at this stage of the hockey season through the playoffs once a week to break down everything that's going wrong with the Pens. And Seth, let's start right there. Why aren't the Penguins better in overtime?
That's a good question. I'm not even sure they're necessarily sure of it. Just to the naked eye, to me, I just think they don't necessarily play it maybe in a sound, safe way. They try to, be very aggressive. And hey, I get it. It's 3-on-3. It's kind of a wide open, delirium of hockey, I guess. There's so much open space. But, for a lot of reasons, they give up a lot of odd man rushes. Even the 4-3 win against Anaheim. Anaheim steals a puck. Sidney Crosby actually gave up a puck in the offensive zone that allowed like a 2-on-1 rush there for Trevor Zegras, who didn't necessarily connect very well on the drop pass there on his breakaway. And in turn, that creates like a 2-on-1 for the Penguins. So, you would think with just all the all-stars that the Penguins have on their roster and all the skill, even if it's maybe a little long in the tooth there, they would have, just the base skill level there to be a little bit more proficient in overtime. But they've been flat out rotten, at least just based on their record in overtime this year, and even going back to portions of last season too. So it's not necessarily a new development. I don't know if I want to blame age on it. I would think that they'd have enough experience and just guile to kind of get by, knowing how to play in that type of environment. But their record has really just not been up to par for more than just even this past season, going back to last season.
One theory I've heard posited is, it's just showing that they're thin at goaltending, especially when Casey DeSmith has to take the OT duties instead of Tristan Jarry. And I don't know how I feel about that. I know sometimes people say, overtime, 3-on-3 is a determinant as to who has the better, more athletic, more dramatic goalie. But then again, I also think sometimes the quality of chances are so clean 3-on-3 that goalies, no matter how good they are, hung out to dry, and it almost evens it out. How do you feel?
In one sense, yes. I'll say it. It's kind of a unfair way to gauge anything one way or another. It's such an abandonment of what 5-on-5 hockey is usually. A lot of times it comes down to just luck or just maybe one mental error here or there, and that's the difference in the game. So. At the same time too, it's part of the rules. It's how the game's laid out right now, and you have to excel there if you want to get the wins. When the Penguins were doing it fairly early in the history of 3-on-3 overtime, 5-6 years ago with Crosby, Malkin, other guys like Phil Kessel, et cetera, kind of racking up a lot of, overtime points and things like that. The Penguins praises were being sung quite regularly about how great they were in overtime then. So, again, I'm always hesitant to put too much weight into it in terms of how you gauge a hockey team's overall value or just strengths and things like that. At the same time, too, it's part of the game. If the Penguins could be praised for it when they were excellent at it early in the 3-on-3 era, they can certainly absorb fair criticism in the current part of or the current era of 3-on-3 hockey.
They got to get two coming up in this game against Ottawa, don't they, Seth? Giving away one, if it were to happen in overtime, it doesn't really matter to me. If the Penguins do get a win in overtime or a shootout against the Senators, I don't care if they give them a point, but they got to walk away with at least 3 or 4 against these guys, do they not?
Yeah, they got to start getting clean 2 points no matter who the competition is. And that's something that they kind of were talking about a little bit after the Anaheim game there. They need to get 2 points no matter who the opponent is. And it's certainly much more important when you play a conference opponent, and all the more important when you play a divisional opponent, as they will be with New Jersey coming up here on Sunday. But they've dug themselves. I don't want to say they've dug themselves a hole, but they really haven't put themselves in a good enough position where. They could, maybe play even average hockey down the final months of the season here. And now that we're into the second half of the season, so as we all know, the Metropolitan Division is quite competitive. The New York Islanders have kind of started to round their season around a little bit here. The New York Rangers are starting to play a little better after a bit of a slow start. We obviously know what the Philadelphia I'm getting my teams mixed up here. The New Jersey Devils, they had been a great start to the season. They've plateaued a bit, but I mean, they're certainly, you know, ahead of the Penguins, and, you know, obviously getting swept by Carolina was hardly a good situation too there. And Washington starting to get some bodies back too. So, it's going to be a slug, for them to even get a wild card spot, I think. And I definitely think the Metro Division is going to claim the two wild card spots here out of the Eastern Conference, but it's going to be tough for them to claim, a wild card spot. Not impossible, but difficult, and they need to get points no matter who the competition is. Ottawa certainly seems like a team that they're more than capable of beating on paper, you know, at least beating in regulation. And, you know, getting a clean 2 points on Friday, I think, would be paramount towards their ultimate goal, at least if, you know, in terms of getting into the playoffs.
Seth Rorba with us. Seth, do you think the officiating was as bad as Mike Sullivan appeared to think in the game against the Senators yesterday?
Well, I'm not sure I would like initiate, say, a golf clap right in the officiating official's direction, but I thought it was poor. That said, I don't think it was the reason, the ultimate reason the Penguins lost that game. Their penalty kill was awful. And obviously, as we mentioned there, Casey DeSmith, you know, maybe needs to maybe make a save there on a fairly routine shot there in overtime to at least, you know, keep that game going. So. But I mean, I had a hard time evaluating much 5-on-5 in that game from in terms of, you know, how the flow went. I mean, there was 21 minutes, I think, of power play time for either team out of the 60 minutes and 25 seconds that game lasted. So you're talking about a third of the game being on special teams. I imagine it was frustrating for both teams, but certainly more so for Mike Sullivan there. And I don't know if that was his best moment in terms of, you know, doing the golf club. He kind of restrained himself a little bit in the post-game comments there, but clearly a lot of frustration. And this is a coach who's always, you know, kind of preached to just play, you know, deal with whatever bad situations come at you and just keep playing. And again, I don't know if that was his best moment there. I mean, it was kind of funny and fun, kind of cute, and, you know, certainly got a couple chuckles out of it on Twitter and stuff last night. But again, that I don't know if that was necessarily his best moment, but I can certainly understand, just given how much the power plays for both teams were deployed in that contest.
I'm with you, Seth, about bringing up the just play thing. In fact, that's what I was going to mention next. Like, for instance, I frequently go after Mike Tomlin for the standard no longer being the standard on the Steelers side, but on the Penguins side, I feel like some of the pillars that Mike Sullivan built his coaching platform on here with the Penguins might be slipping, like the whole just play thing to your point. And you know, he tended to reward and lean on young players to jumpstart things when they weren't going great for the Penguins, not only his first year, but at times in the playoffs too, in the first few seasons. Why is he so reticent to do that now?
Well, I think the difference there is when he, you know, first came up and they started relying on guys like Brian Ross, Tom Kunackle, Matt Murray, Scott Wilson, others. Those are guys he coached in Wilkes-Barre. Those are guys he had a relationship with. Those are guys who had earned his trust for better, you know, fairly or unfairly. And, you know, maybe to a lesser extent, Jake Guentzel the ensuing season. But then in the following years, I mean, if you want to look at some of the guys they've leaned on now, Philip Hollander, or looked at, you know, given, you know, some time D'Angelo roster here, Philip Hollander, Sam Poulin, who, let's be clear, he's on a leave of absence right now, so he's not available to their team. You know, most recently, Jonathan Gruden. I just don't know that he necessarily has that same level of comfort with them. And you know, again, if that's fair or unfair, I don't know, but again, he's these guys are fairly new to him, and I don't know that he's necessarily unique in that. In that sense, I don't know that every single NHL coach is always automatically give an NHL call up all the, you know, ice time in the world, but it certainly has run, you know, counter, I guess, to what Mike Sullivan found success with early in his tenure with the Penguins. Again, he had a prior relationship with Brian Russ and Tom Kunackle and all those guys, so there's definitely a difference in that situation. But and also too, I would point out, I, you know, this was a team that largely abandoned you know, a lot of higher end assets under the Jim late throughout all of Jim Rutherford's tenure. I mean, they didn't have a first round pick for however many years. There's only like two or three first round picks two first round picks from Jim Rutherford's tenure still in the system. That's Kasperi Kapanen and Sam Poulin. So This was an organization that just generally did not invest much into the minor league system or the development system in the name of winning now. And hey, that paid off handsomely with two Stanley Cup rings. But they just don't necessarily have the talent level that they maybe did 5, 6, 7 years ago. Routinely, I mean, the Penguins are usually ranked in the bottom five in the league among independent publications that, you know, that rank minor league systems or development systems. And that's not a coincidence, just given how they treated their development or their future assets in the past 5, 6, 7 years. So I think there's a number of reasons, but at the same time too, it can be frustrating when you see like Jonathan Gruden only got like, I think like 5 minutes of ice time against or maybe even 3 minutes, I think, against Ottawa. So and I'm not saying he's going to make or break the team, but you know, it's curious as to, you know, why is he even here if he's only going to get 3 minutes? And I get special teams can maybe kind of played into that, but you know, what exactly is the point of having Jonathan Gruden in the lineup if he's only going to play 3 minutes? So yeah, there's a whole host of reasons as to why Mike Sullivan maybe, you know, treats his younger players now differently than he did, you know, 5 or 6, 7 years ago, but it's definitely different.
Seth, do you know what's going on with Poulin? Have you heard anything? And do you know what's going on with Letang, when he'll be back?
Nothing on Poulin. That's been a pretty well-kept secret there. He's still on a leave of absence in Quebec, in Montreal, attending to a personal matter. I'm not even, you know, sure if I can call it a family matter or something for him directly personally, but that's an indefinite leave. And I, you know, they've been very, very quiet on that front. As far as Chris Letang, I mean, he started skating on Tuesday here in Cranberry. Don't forget, when he took a leave of absence following the death of his father, he was actually dealing with an injury at that time. And I don't believe he was expected to even play in that Winter Classic up in Boston when he went on his leave. So I don't believe he's had much time or opportunity to kind of rehabilitate his injury either. So Mike Sullivan made a point the other day that he's been off ice really up until Tuesday. He was off the ice for about 2 weeks. So it's going to probably take him some time to kind of get back in the game. Not sometime, but I don't know that it's necessarily automatic that it'll be in the lineup Friday or even going into Sunday, but he's still working his way back from an injury, as well as, you know, certainly, you know, personal strife there. So no timetable on him yet, but you know, certainly a positive sign that he was back on the ice on Tuesday and as well as Wednesday in Ottawa.
Finally, Seth, in terms of making the team better, I'm sure they could all get more out of the top six and, you know, the top talent on the blue line as well. But with the cap situation such as it is, I don't know how much of a boost they can get from bolstering the back half of the defense corps or the bottom six of the forwards. I mean, is there a move that can be made? Is there anything that can be done to sort of spark that aspect of the team?
Well, as far as defense, just getting some guys healthy or back in the lineup, I think, would be a huge boost. I mean, they're missing right now their top three right-handed defensemen, including their two, you know, keynote additions this past offseason. You know, obviously, Chris Letang, as we mentioned, and then the two additions, Jeff Petrie and Jan Ruda, out with injuries right now. And their cap situation is so tight that I think they have to send – in order for Jeff Petrie to be back in the lineup and be off long-term injured reserve, everyone that they've called up from Wilkes-Barre in the past few weeks would have to go back to Wilkes-Barre.
Wow.
To make them cap compliant. That's how tight. I mean, Jeff Petrie has the second highest cap hit on the team at 6.5. That's a contract he'd signed in Montreal many years ago, and obviously the Penguins brought on here. That's just how tight they are against the cap here. As far as the bottom six forwards, you know, I'm not terribly, you know, out of love, I guess you could say, with what they were using for a few weeks there with Josh Archibald, Teddy Bluger, and Ryan Poehling as a fourth line. And, you know, I thought those guys did some things. Yeah, maybe not offensively, but you know, they draw a penalty, or they, you know, they bring some energy with a hit, or win some key defensive zone faceoffs. I mean, there were some subtle contributions they would make, you know, typical classic fourth line contributions. That third line, whether it's some combination of Brock McGinn, Jeff Carter, Kasperi Kapanen, I guess that's been the most common combination. That's just that there's been minimal contributions there. And I say that while acknowledging Brock McGinn kind of got off to a really hot start with his scoring pace in the first half of the season. But I just, you know, you have two guys in Jeff Carter and Kasperi Kapanen who just, they've offered fairly minimal contributions to this team so far. And I know they've tried to maybe, you know, help Jeff Carter a little bit here by putting him on the right wing and moving Teddy Bluger to the third line there. But even then, it's been minimal. So I mean, if they have to make a trade, to me, it's a bottom six forward in some shape or form. I just don't know how you do it with the minimal cap space they were projected to have. If everyone's healthy, they probably have about 83 grand in cap space. That's clearly not enough to even call up a guy from Wilkes-Barre, let alone make a significant trade. You'd have to send someone off your roster with a big cap hit. You'd have to get the other team to absorb some of the cap hit of the incoming player. And this isn't necessarily a problem that's exclusive to the Penguins. I mean, I'm looking at cap friendly right now, and there's only about 11 teams in the 32 NHL that are expected to have at least $1 million worth of cap space by the end of the year. League minimum salary is, what, $775? So there's a lot of teams right now dealing with this same problem. And it's tied back to, you know, the pandemic and the flat cap and stagnant league revenues. And mostly the teams that do have the cap space are teams that are rebuilding or maybe have some younger guys in their roster. So, I mean, you know, maybe a team like, say, the Arizona Coyotes can kind of exploit a team that's against the cap hit by taking on a bigger contract, but also getting some future assets, a high first round pick or a high-end prospect. And that's kind of counter to what Ron Hextall's always said here. He doesn't want to give away too many future assets to build a team now. So, I just don't know how the Penguins get out of this, just based on, you know, if you want to say they've mismanaged their cap with some bad signings like Carter and Kapanen, I can hear you on that. At the same time, too, I think this is a league-wide problem. 23 other teams, or, you know, 23 teams in total right now are really up against the cap one way or another. And I just don't know that we're going to see a really, really aggressive trade deadline here when it comes up here in early March. I mean, we haven't even received many trades so far at this point of the season. I think maybe the biggest trade so far this season has been Ryan Reeves going from the New York Rangers to the Minnesota Wild. And that was for like a draft pick or something like that. So it's been a really slow time for the NHL in terms of trades. And I don't know that it's necessarily going to be all that different as the trade deadline approaches, just based on the realities of the economics, you know, still stemming from the pandemic.
Seth, thanks. Appreciate it. Enjoy the game. We'll read your coverage of it in the Trib on Friday evening. And we look forward to speaking with you once a week moving forward here for the rest of the season.
Sounds good. Then take care, man.
All right. Seth Rohrbaugh, our beat writer, covers the Pens here on Breakfast with the Pens.